Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Change Agent's Dilemma for Tuesday, July 19th, 2011. I'm your host, Heather Stagel, coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia, as I do once a month on Blog Talk Radio. This show is one of the many ways I help equip individuals to lead organizational change at Inclaria LLC. The Change Agent's Dilemma is how to influence change without authority. And my goal with this show is to provide ideas and methodologies to help you do just that. Today, my guest is Terry Cruzan, who is here to tell us how to spot and correct a workplace culture problem. Writer, speaker, and consultant Terry Cruzan is the Culture Sleuth, a workplace culture specialist with over 20 years of experience in integrating culture knowledge into broad-based organizational change efforts. Her work deals with identifying the beliefs, practices, norms, and dynamics that characterize the ways people work together and developing practical strategies for optimizing workplace culture. Terry helps organizations align culture with desired strategic direction, supporting managers and leaders with how-to skills in applying their understanding of culture to their day-to-day practices. Terry earned her bachelor's degree from Mount Holyoke College and her MBA degree from Emory University, and she is the co-author of the book A Guide to Culture Audits. Terry, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome, Heather. I'm glad to be here.
So let's just dive right in, and I'll ask the question, why is culture important? Why do change agents need to even know what it is?
Well, first off, the beliefs around the way we are conducting business are changing around us every day. And having a deeper understanding of how culture works can come in handy. It can make change work more sustainable and easier. I can't give any absolute promises, but if you know about possible cultural roadblocks or shortcuts in advance, you can plan proactively. I like to use stories a lot when I talk about this, so you'll see my say something, and then I'll try to use a story to help you see how it comes out in culture words. As an example, I recently worked with a colleague to develop a culture shortcut for her company's lean and agile change effort. She works in a commodity distribution company with a strong execution focus where people are wired for action and completing tasks. The lean and agile effort required regional leaders to implement a long-term strategy of breaking down current distribution processes and putting them back together in a way to improve efficiency and costs. It's happening every day. The culture shortcut was to know in advance the importance of breaking down the long-term process into bite-sized tasks with clear deliverables and timeframes to match the cultural wiring of the company. The regional leaders were comfortable with this approach and showed less resistance than expected to the overall effort. The beauty that I like about this culture shortcut is that it works with the grain of the culture while at the same time working against the grain with its ultimate lean and agile goals. Does that make sense, Heather?
Yes. So let's focus on, because everybody has a different definition of culture, it seems like, or some people may not know what culture means at all. So How do you define workplace culture or corporate culture?
Well, simply put, culture is the context that tells people how to act without being explicitly told. The important part about that is that it tells people how to act without being told. It includes common rules of behavior driven by shared beliefs about how to be successful. What many people do when they understand work with culture is they can describe some of those shared behaviors, the common rules of behavior, but they don't spend the time to dig deeper to see what might be the underlying beliefs that are driving those behaviors. And many times those beliefs were put in place by the founder or the founders of an organization, and they have been passed down and never questioned whether they're useful or not today. Mm-hmm. I many times use a personal story to help people understand the depth of culture, the underlying beliefs. Every group of people, families, workplaces, regions of the world have have a culture that tells people how to act without being told. So this is my family story. Recently, our family went on a vacation to Yellowstone National Park. After the third day, my teenage son asked, "Why do we have to stop at every historical marker?" My quick response was, "It is important to know your facts and learn from the past to understand today." I then shared for the umpteenth time my childhood story of visiting every pioneer and colonial village east of the Mississippi River. But when we returned from vacation, I called my mom up to share our trip and ask her why we stopped at so many historical markers when we went on family trips when I was a child. Her immediate response was, "It is important to know your facts and learn from the past to understand today." I caught my breath. I used exact words in talking to my son. And she continued, "It was important for me to teach my children how to learn in case they could not go to college." For whatever reason, my mom chose to get married early, and she never went to college. Her explanation helped me understand her fixation about historical markers and my fixation. It also made me realize how strongly her belief about the importance of learning influences my behavior today with my own son. Cultural beliefs and accompanying practices and rules of behavior get passed down in our organizations just like in families. We know the practices, the rules by heart, but we do not always know the why in our heads. It becomes important to ask why to understand the underlying beliefs when the practices no longer bring success. In relation to my story and my son's dislike of historical markers, we talked about it as a family, and my teenage son grudgingly decided that knowing how to learn was important. He asked for fewer historical marker stops, though, and we agreed, if he was willing to look up facts and history questions on his handheld. This story applies to the workplace in that most times cultural beliefs do not need to be totally changed. In this situation here, we stayed with the idea that it was important to learn from the past, but it may need to be slightly altered or tweaked to be balanced to the needs of today. And as we go through this today, that'll be a very common theme. It's not usually talking about wholesale change of culture. It's about a slight tweaking or redirecting. Another important aspect about corporate culture, workplace culture, organizational culture, there's a lot of words for it. It's about how people act in workplaces. Is that there are usually three kinds or buckets of beliefs, those underlying drivers, that guide people to support the success of a company. They are strategic beliefs that are the sources of competitive advantage for a company and drive business planning decisions. Operational beliefs that guide people how to act day-to-day to implement the company's strategic direction. And governance beliefs that drive who and how decisions are made in management structure. I mean, these categories are really not set in stone, but they do provide an organizing framework on how culture works and making sure for you to understand the process yourself so you be able to identify those roadblocks or shortcuts. We could spend a lot of time talking about those, and if we have the time, we can go back and give some examples of strategic, operational, and governance. But they clearly what most people do when they talk about culture, they are describing those operational and governance rules of behavior, sometimes beliefs, but many times they're not including the strategic drivers. And as you would expect, the strategic drivers are really the most important ones that drive the success of a company. And when they start going wrong or bleeding into and influencing the operational and governance, that's where you might see some roadblocks.
So then the strategic might be something like beliefs about what consumers will buy or how, like the, what kinds of, just a few examples of what strategic.
Okay, okay. Yeah. Okay, that's a good idea. Well, I mean, I think a really simple one is you as a company, is your strategic, your source of competitive advantage in developing, yeah, inventing products, or do you apply ideas and reinvent them in different ways? Another very strong strategic belief is brand. Maintaining our brand is key to our success, and that leads to protecting quality and reputation. Another one is ability to respond to customer needs drives development of new products. that's different than a customer service value or a belief that says we need to do to serve the customer. But if we truly listen to the customer and use that market research to develop products, that is a strategic driver. And so there's a difference in customer service and really responding to customer needs to develop products.
Okay. So culture is something that is always there. There's never a lack of culture, right?
No, yeah, that's right. You're swimming in it all. You're actually swimming in it and don't realize it. My friend Jim Rogers, who I've worked with a lot, he just talks about the analogy of culture as water, is that you're swimming in it, but you, if you were a fish, you wouldn't be able to survive if you got out of it.
Right. And the fish don't know that they're in water, necessarily.
And the fish don't know that they're swimming until they get out of it, too. And you know that when you go from, say, your family for the first time, or if you go from your business to a new business, and you say, ooh, people do things differently here.
Right.
And you understand that, and you can identify it, but you may not spend the time to see what are those underlying beliefs that driving it and why.
Right. So when does culture become a problem?
Well, this is I've spent some time on this, and I'm going to go slowly here because it's complicated. And for people listening, this may be the time to slow down on multitasking because culture work is complicated. But if you have a good framework around it, you can get it. Workplace culture is a problem when you do not understand its quirks. It's quirks, the way it works, it may work for you or against you. As you may know, culture work is a continuous process of balancing beliefs taken to an extreme and deciding how to redirect some rules of behavior or some practices that have been inadvertently applied in places where they do not belong. Now, Heather, I'm just trying this out. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so if there's an existing culture and... So a culture is created because of what is successful.
Mm-hmm, that's exactly right.
You know, how people, right? So then what may be successful in the organization in some areas may not be as successful in other areas.
Yes, that's exactly right. It's, yeah, it kind of bleeds over. Right, exactly, and that's probably what happens. And so many times when you're working with culture, you're talking about balancing some beliefs that are taken to an extreme and redirecting it. So let me use a story here to help explain. I'm going to talk about a retail clothing company with a strong brand culture. Many times in these kind of companies, it is important for people who work there to dress and act in a certain way. They need to represent the brand. But many times, especially if it makes sense to represent the brand if you come in contact with customers on a regular basis and you're representing the brand. But many times it becomes expected in a brand culture for all employees, no matter where they work, on the sales floor, or the back office, and the corporate office, to conform these standards of how to look and act. It is a rule about conformity or fit, and it is now influencing everyone's development and advancement, success, and opportunities within the organization. Many times there become employee retention issues, people leave, they become perceptions of lack of fairness because we can't understand if it's how important it is and why do we have to look and act a certain way if we're not out there interacting with customers. And the culture in this way has inadvertently become a roadblock. The strategic driver about a brand being important has influenced what's going on in the operation. It's become a roadblock, you've identified it. But from a change manager's perspective, you now have a leverage point on where to start redirecting the culture. You now say, we're not going to want to get rid of that, but where is it a requirement and where it is not? I mean, an important clue in this is that maintaining the brand is a strategic belief for success, and its influence has become so strong, it is now affecting the internal operations. And this happens many times with strategic beliefs that have proven to be very, very successful. The change agent's job now is to work with leaders and the company's development and advancement policies and people in that arena and decide where this rule about dressing and acting in a certain way to represent the brand is a requirement and where it is not. You certainly do not want to do anything to dilute the power of the brand, but it is time to redirect some of those rules on the operational side that are not working for what needs to be done in the organization. Does that story help?
Sure. So you know that the audience for this show are people who are what I say, leading change from the middle. People in their organizations who don't necessarily have authority, but they're trying to get some kind of a change happening in the organization. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what are the signs that someone who has a project in an organization that may not be specifically a culture project, maybe it's process improvement, maybe it's strategic planning or something in HR or IT or wherever they happen to be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what are the signs that you need to look beyond the, say, the process that you're trying to change and look at more at culture?
Yeah, well, the first thing is the biggest clue is to be learned from the past, and whether similar change goals, similar change efforts produced any new ways of working, and if they didn't, why? Because in this process here, you're going to have your goal, but you want to know in advance, are there any culture roadblocks that I need to be aware of to put in my planning process? May there be also any culture shortcuts that we need to include to help us do this work more effectively? You want to go with the grain of the culture as many times as possible. And this learning from the past is really, really helpful by doing a little bit of interviewing and talking to people before you start an effort. And here's another story about that in terms of working with a client who did go about and how you go back for talking to people from different levels of the company and how hard or easy doing this change effort was and why. In that process, you can identify roadblocks and shortcuts in the past and the stories behind them. If there has not been any significant cultural shifts from a similar effort done in the past, you will probably recognize the same rules of behavior and practices that you're trying to address today. And this can lead you to understanding more deeply about what might be those underlying beliefs in your culture that were stymieing that change effort in the past and helping you to be prepared in your current efforts to be able to address them more proactively. So say, for example, you're responsible for developing and training folks on using a new CRM or customer management system. If your company truly values listening to customer input as one of the ways to create new products and services, your job will certainly be easy in doing the CRM system. Your culture shortcut is to make sure you position the use of the CRM tool as a way to enhance already the beliefs around listening to the customer. And the CRM tool will certainly make people more successful. But if you find out after talking to folks about previous efforts to put in a CRM system that it was never fully utilized, you need to put your ears go up. Your antennas need to go up. You listen to what people are saying. They complain maybe that the company talks about listening to customer input and market research, but then rewards the folks who develop personal relationships with clients. So taking the time to inputting data into a computer takes time away from having lunch with clients. This is a cultural roadblock. And you know that just training people on using the new CRM will produce the same results that happened in the past. This next step is a cultural discussion is probably needed with group leaders on the cultural roadblock and how leaders will need to, you know, need to model and reward the use of the new system and communicate a very clear business case. So this is an example of how you can learn from the past and then say, okay, what do I need to do differently as I implement a CRM system today? So that's my sense that you need to go back out and find out how does the culture respond in the past to what you're trying to do now.
Okay. And then I'm just thinking if somebody is in the middle of a process and they're feeling resistance in whatever shape that is happening, could it be that culture, that they're trying to work against the culture?
That'd be a good sign that they're working against the grain of the culture and they may want to step back and say, okay, maybe I need to take the time now to figure out what is this culture, what are those underlying beliefs? And we'll talk next about maybe the ways to be able to understand what those deeper values, the deeper culture beliefs are. Yeah, and many times people do start and then come up against the roadblocks. Instead of just getting stymied by it and keep on doing the same thing you've done before, I'm sure most change agents try to respond. With a little deeper knowledge about culture, you might be able to find those leverage points that are where the roadblocks actually are.
And something that I commonly see is that people, change agents might blame individuals, like so-and-so is just being a jerk or they're just being, they're just a brick wall, you know, and we're talking to them as like hitting your head against a brick wall kind of an idea. And in reality, if you look deeper, it's not that person. It's just the environment they're in, the culture that they're working within has created those behaviors.
Right. It can sometimes be personal stuff as well. I mean, that's a real
sure.
double whammy, but they know what they're being rewarded. They know, again, if they're rewarded for developing personal relationships with clients and not using a computer system taken away from that, they're going to do
right.
what they're rewarded for. And and things won't change unless you can probably go up the chain of command and ask some questions and have some good culture discussions, because many times leaders don't realize they want the desired behavior, they want to have the desired results. They haven't taken the time to understand what their current culture values and rewards, and that going against that grain is difficult to do for people. And that's clearly where, you know, I'm sure you people talk about it, you need to have that leader clearly articulating the business case and walking the talk and modeling it and rewarding people for the new behaviors. That's clearly some of the most important parts about culture shift.
Okay. So once you've identified that culture might be an issue when it comes to your change initiative, how do you measure it or assess it so that you know what you're dealing with?
You know, there's lots of ways to do it, formally or informally. I'm going to talk about the informal, very informal process that is an individual change agent might be able to start doing themselves. And then, of course, they can go out and seek more formal support from culture experts or tools out there. But there's things that you can do as an individual, and I call you becoming like a culture sleuth, an armchair culture sleuth. So you can spot culture problems, culture roadblocks, cultural shortcuts. And you think of yourself as an investigator, such as on TV shows, Law and Order, CSI. Your job is to identify the culture's rules of behavior and then look for underlying reasons for people's actions, the beliefs. And you need to do this by always being curious and constantly asking why. You're never going to say, okay, that's the answer, but why do you say that? Some simple steps to do that to become a culture sleuth is just to observe what is put up on the walls of your organization, in the walls of your offices, what pictures, plaques, what does your web page say? I mean, just right wherever you're sitting right now, look around in the room that you're sitting in and see what you have put up on the wall in this room, or where you are if you're not in your own office. I mean, I look around my office and I can see postcards from people, places that I've traveled around the world. I can see pictures of my dancing career when I was a professional dancer. I can see the plaques on the wall from having been involved in my children's education system, awards I did for being Volunteer of the Year. All of those are clues about what I'm valuing. An organization puts things on the wall that says what they value, what they take pride in. So that's the first part often that. The other part, you can listen to how people respond to questions. Simple thing is to go into a meeting and you observe, how do people respond to questions? How do they ask questions? Do they stand up and interrupt people? Do they sit back and listen and quietly find the right time to be able to ask that question? Again, those are clues around what may be valued. In the place where people just interrupt and try to get their message in, there may be an underlying value around the individual success. Individual is a source of success. And this, in the workplace where people take the time to listen and then ask their question with some thoughtfulness, you may have a more collective or group belief system that values consensus and data gathering. So, again, you can observe and think about it and come up with some deeper understanding. You can also investigate what I'm talking about. Investigate what the company measures. What is the company measure tells you what is valued. You can also ask people what it takes to be successful. Record all the answers. You're going to do some analysis and theming of this, but you can come up with your own database. You can go to the engagement survey and take a deeper look at what are the most strongest behaviors that people say are important, negative or positive, but what does the organization reward? The other thing is you can dig deeper into the stories about company founders, leaders, and how the company responded to crises. When a leader talks about that for the umpteenth time, listen, and listen a little deeper to say, are they giving you the reason why we responded that way? And do we see some of those same actions today? And you can link these clues together to create a culture map of beliefs, rules of behavior, and how they interact. And you may be able to find, oh, there's a roadblock. There's a shortcut to achieving some change goals. And then this culture map doesn't have to be really detailed, but you need to be confident enough in your findings to be able to have some important culture conversations with leaders and get them involved in the change plans, letting them know that it is their responsibility to create and maintain the culture of the organization. So that's kind of being an armchair culture sleuth. You take responsibility for yourself and constantly ask the question why and look to dig a little deeper. Now, I think that's the first step if you're going to really become, a culture sleuth and use it to make your work easier and more sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Great. So then how, once you have an idea, a better idea of what the culture is and what might be roadblocks or shortcuts, you know, what do you do about it? How do you shape the culture, change the culture?
Yeah.
What do you do?
Right. And, you know, we only have a few more minutes left, so I'm just going to do some big picture ones. And, again, this is also just, you know, piquing people's interest. There's lots of material out there on how to shaping culture, but this is just the approach that I work with on. I mean, the bottom line is, how do you make change work more sustainable? How do you make it easier for yourself? How do you spot those culture roadblocks and shortcuts? To start with is start with understanding the current culture and its quirks. Many leaders want to talk about where they want to go and don't realize that where you want to go, you have to first get through where you are right now. And you should be able to describe how it works in the language of the organization. You want to listen to people how they describe it. When they talk about the brand being important, they may use their own language around that. We need to follow what our leader says and how he dresses. That's just the cues to how the organization talks about its own culture. You need to find from this work some leverage points in the current culture to balance or redirect. You want to be able to understand enough, if that's a roadblock, okay, here's a leverage point. This is where I'm going to start going in and doing some culture work and redirecting and using the traditional ways of being able to change behaviors. As you work on changing behaviors through training and rewarding, at the same time you need to initiate culture conversations with positional and informal leaders before initiative starts. That's really important to that process there. If you know there's going to be some roadblocks, you're going to need to have some help. You may also want to pilot it in a smaller group within the organization where you know you may have that leadership support. Many times you want to do a pilot that's still out there to show success, because other people will follow when they see success. And the main thing about doing culture shaping work or culture redirecting is there needs to be consistency between different levels of interventions. The leader messages and the behaviors need to be consistent in how they reward and model to what you say you want. And you need to have the organizational systems and practices lining up to the new behaviors that you want. And you need to be able to train people on learning the new ways of doing things. Many change efforts only focus on one of these levels. They may do the training, they may put in a new system, or they may just have leaders talking about what they want people to do or how they want them to behave, but they haven't trained anyone and they haven't made sure that the systems align up. So you need to have alignment between those three forms of culture of intervention. Mm-hmm. I mean, and the culture bottom line is the most important way to shift culture is the simple adage that is part of parenting, and it works just as well for leaders and for organizations. People watch what leaders do more than what they say.
Mm-hmm.
And
amen.
it works for raising kids, and it works for shifting and modeling shifting culture.
Right. Yeah, do as I say, not what I do doesn't work.
It doesn't work. And kids are smart about that, and employees are smart about that. When you're putting in a new CRM system and the person who's developing personal relationships is still getting rewarded more than you that are diligently putting in all your market research data, a smart employee knows which way they're going to go.
Right. Well, Terry, thank you so much for sharing some of your knowledge on culture and culture change. I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing what you know. Can listeners find out more?
They can go to my culturesleuth.net website and listen to what I have there and give me a call. You know, my job is to help leaders and change agents be comfortable in having honest culture conversations. I believe it is a 21st century source of competitive advantage for people as the world moves so quickly around us. And you can see I'm very passionate about what I do, and I like helping organizations investigate the ins and outs of culture so they can lead real organizational change.
Great.
So give me a call.
Mary.
I love having culture conversations. I'm real good at listening deeply and coming up with those culture clues and roadblocks quickly. And I really, the shortcuts, too. You don't want to forget that how culture can work for you.
Right. So coming up next, our next episode is Tuesday, August 16th. My guest, it will be an internal consultant who has actually recently let go from her job, and she has learned so much from the experience that she wanted to share what her lessons learned were and also explain the warning signs that your initiative is about to be derailed. So that would be a good story to hear. In the meantime, if you would like to find additional resources and to see how we might work together to influence change in your organization, please visit www.anclaria.com. Thank you so much for listening to The Change Agent's Dilemma. Take care and best wishes for your change initiative.
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer odor control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer odor control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty! Yeah.